strong in the bowl, who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we talked about officially becoming a Sydney Snack fan podcast, but I think we'll keep the lid on that at least for another week.
Okay, we should have talked about this in pre-meeting, because I'm not sure I would have agreed to your decision. He's good.
Yeah, he's good.
So on my notes, very insightful. Are you sitting down for this particular insight?
Yeah.
So brave and clean.
Yeah. I've got functional football quickness, actually. That was mine. That was because... You know, he didn't test out terribly. He didn't test out as being fast at the draft camp, but he plays football fast, which is very useful.
Yeah, he's quick of mind and hand, which is, you know, most unusual comparison. He sort of reminds me a bit of Nick Vostone sometimes, and how his hand passes create space in the back line. Yeah, it's just that there is no way his first three games could have gone better. Well, actually there is, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
First two games.
Yeah, it's going really well. Three games.
Three games, yep.
So we had five first and second year players in the team on the weekend, which, let's face it, watching the Swans not in their current incarnation, not all that much fun, but having some youth and enthusiasm, yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah, the game was actually, at halftime, it was a great game. The second quarter was exciting, it was dynamic, it was free-flowing. And then the second half was...
And you were 5 goals up.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was an exciting 5 goals. Like, watch the last 10 minutes of the second quarter again. It's exciting, it's good football. You know, our slingshot game was working really well, and, you know, the exciting hand passes, attacking hand passes leading to long kicks into the forward line. All great, but, the Swans came out in the second half and, despite being down by 30 points, decided to keep their extra man in defence and not kick long down the line. And essentially they played to, do exactly what they did, which was to minimise the size of their loss, rather than actually, you know, go for a win. So I'm not normally one. I think you normally point the finger at the other team for playing boring football, but I think this time I squarely put the blame of the fact that the second half was pretty dull at the feet of the Swans.
I wondered about to what extent we did rotations in the last quarter with a view to Wednesday. That was a thought.
I think there's truth in that. That, for instance, Nank played 70% game time, 72% game time, and you know, for those at home, he's above 80. And for instance, Gawn, his Wednesday opponent, played above 80% on the against St Kilda on the weekend. But you know, and Dusty was forward a lot, but he was forward a lot in the first half too. So I think there was a basic problem that. You know, we maybe, you know, as you point out, we've got a lot of first-year players and first and second-year players, and we didn't quite cut through. And secondly, the Swans weren't allowing us to because they were nothing if not dull. I think there's a bit of all three columns going on there, but it did mean that I think the entertaining football, aside for one or two spurts, pretty much stopped after halftime.
Yeah, look, I think both Bolter goals were in the second half.
Oh, no. One of the Bolter goals was... It, it, cause, oh. It was almost my favourite passage of play because Bolton kicked it to him. It was magnificent football. I always get very excited by Shai Bolton. And beautiful conversion.
Let's talk about him some more later. It was a funny game. You know, if you'd said, look, we're going to lead all day, end up and, you know, final margin, if anything, flattered them. Tom Lynch will be goalless and mostly frustrated through the course of the day. You'd take it.
Plus 22 inside 50s.
Mm, yeah, and the finishing was a bit frustrating, so...
Yeah, they allowed it. They defended very deep. Mm. It's their style, so
that's true.
But, you know, there's one thing to defend deep. It's pretty hard to make up a minus 22 inside 50 differential. No game plan can regularly overcome that. So it was a legit win. And you put the extra filter on as, you know, this was a team that played finals last year. As you said, we had a reasonable amount of inexperienced players. Like, you take all of that before the game. It's just, it feels just mildly disappointing, I think, just because the first half was better than the second.
Yeah, Jack Ross was awesome in the first half as well. Yep. And very much died out in the second. And, yeah, I really like, not just because he's new, I really like him, watching him play football. The composure we talked about last week, the way he links through sets of hands. Yeah, fun.
Yeah, he's great big body, a lot of fun, good long kick, and I noticed he's starting to, his teammates hand pass to him more this week to kick, showing his increased status. Shai Bolton did a very similar thing in that really good in the second quarter and then disappeared. And, you know, the two players who are both young and exciting and good to watch.
He should have had two goals in the third quarter.
He should have.
The second one particularly, I just love that when he turns on the Jets and burns them off.
But like in the second quarter, he was legitimately a key part of why we were good. He set up two really important goals.
The talent ceiling is there. Like, yeah, he's extremely dynamic player.
I just hope it's time we stop using shoulda when we talk about Shai Bolton and was, and instead just say was.
Yeah. Yeah, look, he was pretty good. It still caused Dimmer some frustration.
His pressure acts were okay.
Yeah, pressure acts were okay. He's still a bit noodle. It's funny that, he's not only slightly smaller than Dan Rioli, but feels like... It's almost impossible to shrug a Dan Rioli tackle. Dan Rioli tackles most likely to cause a turnover of the top 250 guys in the AFL who laid a tackle last year.
Yeah, he's just really, and the way when he puts on the Jets, even when he was managing a Corky, his extra yard of pace and his ability to really close hard in both when we've got the ball and when he's chasing is just, it's so valuable. It's worth, I really hope that Corky's not bad because we're really going to miss him.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be too bad, but yeah, I think Wednesday could be a problem.
Yeah, so just, I know, it's really hard to know with Corky's. And he played through it, but, you know, that doesn't mean it's not going to be bad afterwards. So just on the pressure axe, if you, by the AFL's measure, Higgins, Castagna and Bolton were all, roughly about the same level, but they all had, 23 to 24, and, you know, Castagna is in the team, if not for pressure. So, you know, the point of that is that, Bolton is not noticeably bad.
I thought the forward line was pretty good. I liked Liam Baker's game again.
Well, the advanced metrics loved it. He was one of our top-rated players.
Again,
yeah. And it's because he's setting up goals. Now, he missed a cracking shot in the first half, which was a terrible, terrible miss. But then he got one back. There was a debate. You know, neither of us play fantasy football, but I think he's a high-value player in fantasy football at the moment. I noticed we've been tagged in some online debate about whether or not to trade him. I won't be trading him for the moment because his work rate's really high. He's covering a lot of ground. And his arrival on the team has coincided with a noticeable improvement in our pressure. Now, Dimasis was okay against the GWS game, and then we ran out of legs. Well, Baker helps you not run out of legs because he's got great endurance.
He does. He gets shrugged a bit more.
Yep.
Again, more so than other guys. Oh, I was fascinated. He took a couple of turns in the centre square. I really did not expect that.
No, and you know that shot, and it's interesting, and sort of offensively when we're moving the ball, he's becoming more and more he's becoming more and more important, and it is noteworthy that that shot he missed, had that been Dan Butler, Dan Butler would put on the Jets and run the ball all the way in, and it is noticeable that Baker didn't trust his speed.
Yeah, and he doesn't have that closing tackle pressure we talked about last week. So yeah, look, he's certainly keeping his spot in the team, but yeah, there's still the things that are a challenge for him.
I love his work rate.
Hmm. Yeah, he's a big endurance runner. Like,
and you know what I was thinking, Nick, is that, you know, we joked when we got him and then we got Arts, we just keep drafting the same type of guys. it's a young man's game because it requires a lot of speed. And it requires it's a high effort position. You've got to do a lot of unrewarded running. You know, as far as I'm concerned, let's keep, because they seem to be cheap because we value them more than any other club. And we keep getting them on the cheap. I'm fine with bringing in a new one every few years and, you know, like Baker's actually turned out to be a really good pick because we thought we're overloaded in this position. And then it turned out, you know, Butler hasn't quite kicked on and, you know, Rioli's often. And now Baker's turned out to be a really good draft pick and you get them cheap. I'm fine with.
Well, and so we played Bolton, Rioli, Higgins and Baker in the same team. If you're playing four of those guys. And Castagna. Yeah, five. Good.
Yeah.
You're playing five of those guys. The flip side to it being that you get these waves of guys running down the field. It looks fantastic.
As AFL small ball, and because we value that position more than other clubs, I think we get the players a bit cheaper than we would otherwise. I think Nick, we are exploiting a structural weakness in the market.
Market in the fishery. I liked Nathan Broad's game. I thought he held up very well against the $600,000 man Sam Reid.
Yeah, lots of people are giving his game lots. You know, his ability to cover. I think the absence of Rance is really highlighting what the others contribute, and. I don't think it was Grimes' best game.
But he's still good.
Oh, clearly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought that one of the frustrations of the Swans is that I think their only path to victory was him kicking 7 or 8, and they didn't actually let Buddy go.
You know, Tony Shaw's come out and said that he's thought about it and Lance Franklin should be traded to Collingwood. Oh, my God. Looking at that game, how unwatchable would the Swans be without him? B, Collingwood don't have a first-round draft pick this year, and I think he's got another 3 or 4 years left on his contract that takes him through his late 30s. I just don't think it works.
Oh, it's an appallingly stupid rumour. Like, the salary cap clearly doesn't work. By the way, the Swans would love to trade Buddy in 2 years' time when he's at the dud end of his contract. I mean, we'd love to trade Tom Lynch in 5 years' time. You know, when he's given those extra years of his contract where he's not performing anymore. But it's a silly rumor, and it got so much currency. It's like, come on, let's be smarter than this. It's a Tony Shaw rumor. Like, it's Any look at the actual balance of like who's got the assets, who's got the cap room, and who's got the incentives here is why on earth would you do it? But the rumor gets legs because football media is still stupid. Anyway, so Nick, we've gone this far and we haven't talked about our BOG.
Did he impress you?
Yeah, he was clearly our BOG. And you know,
too.
Sorry.
He was pretty good too.
Oh, I think Presti was clearly the BOG, and I'll say why. Like, it's no secret I've been a bit down on Presti, and part of it is his raw numbers aren't great. He doesn't get that many contested possessions, and then he's rarely, although he might get meters gained, he's rarely has many score involvements because I think his kicking is not always great. None of those things were true on the weekend. He got 15 contested possessions, 8 clearances, and he led the team in score involvements because I thought his kicking was really on.
There was still a few shanks.
There was still a few shanks, and there was one kick to Lynch that
he did have a lot of kicks. Which
he did, but like there was a kick late in the second quarter where he kicked it to Caddy. I believe it was the one where Caddy kicked the goal as the half ran out. And it was a 55-meter perler right to Caddy's advantageous side. And it's just some off not too many steps from Preston. I just haven't seen him make too many kicks like that. Look, I thought he was great. And we can talk about Dusty in a second. But, the thing with Preston is, like, I think that's probably his second best game for the club after the Geelong final. He needs to have 3 or 4 games like that a year, not sort of 2 in every 45, which is what he's averaging at the moment for Richmond. But that was great, I was really impressed with that game, and more please.
So we smashed them at the centre clearances. It was 17-8, and he Nank and Dusty all had 4 each, but yeah, the 3 goal assists for Presti. He was just fantastic work rate. And when he's playing that well, we don't miss Cochin at all. And Dusty, and between that and the Jack Ross experience in the first half, there was no problems playing Dusty forward, where he was a complete weapon. So. Yeah, I thought it worked out pretty well, and yeah, I thought Dusty was a bounce back game. You know, 16 contested possessions, which more than anyone else on the field. Yeah, 4 marks inside 50, 3 goals, could have had 4.
Probably should have.
It was a pretty good day at the office.
It was. It wasn't. I think Dusty's transcendent best is still Dusty. He plays mainly in the midfield and then occasionally goes forward. He did seem to play, he almost became like our second key forward for long periods of the game, which I'm not actually sure I love him doing.
I'm pretty fond of Dusty going to the goal square at the end of quarters.
Yeah, sorry, you know, anyone could have got that over the top hand pass.
I was thinking of the grand final.
Oh, right, yeah, of course. He was good. It wasn't sort of
it wasn't. No, he won't. He won't get ten coaches' votes. He will get coaches' votes.
Yeah, he wasn't. Oh, he deserves to. But it wasn't the sort of transcendent on the way to a big Brownlow victory performance. But it was interesting. I really wanted to see him come one game where he just takes over the game from the middle, rather than is just our best forward. But that's judging Dusty from a very very high standard.
Oh, Bolter. He remains a box of chocolates.
I keep playing him because his little flashes of he might disappear for a period, but he contributes 1 or 2 goals every week through doing something that other people don't do.
Well, and he was vaguely functional as a forward. I think you have to play him this week because Melbourne have 2 6'9" plus ruckmen. He has the eye-popping moments, and I think also because Melbourne sometimes can go quite big in their forward line, just having that extra depth. He doesn't play all that much time on ground, which I think says that his place in the team is not a lock. But I'm like you. I want to keep him in the team. It's fascinating to watch.
So his time on ground was higher than it was last week. And it's sort of an interesting one because you probably don't want to play Shai Bolton that high minutes either. So you got two guys who you probably rather prefer to use as shock weapons off the bench. But, you know, he does give Nank a genuine chop out, and he just does do these random good things. And I think he's hopefully learning something by every game in the seniors. And, you know, we've all heard the VFL reports. He did a couple of amazing things and he could be anything. And when people watch him in the VFL, well, why not have him do those couple of amazing things in the AFL? Because he does them at both levels. It's just at both levels he's not consistent. So why not have him do it at the higher level?
He doesn't know where to run sometimes. I think that's a...
And he's clearly been told to put on pressure. But he doesn't quite know how to do it.
It's not instinctive.
If you watch, our pressure is very, very thoughtful. There was actually a moment in the game where you can see it was Baker and one other player, but it was after a centre square, and the Swans player goes to his hands and knees, and both Richmond players run past him. They were both hot on him, and they both ran past him because they knew as soon as he went down that we're not all going to pile in on this. We're going to go to the player who was going to next to. And the Swan player was actually untouched for a little while because because the Richmond, the pressure is thoughtful. It's not just run mildly at the man. Mm. It's one person goes in and then the next person's setting up for the next hand pass and the next hand pass. And Bolton knows none of that. He just runs at 100 miles an hour, at the man, which is, it has its own use, but it's not as effective as, say, God bless him, George Castagna, does help. Really good in that pressure game.
His pressure is quite functional.
Actually,
speaking of functional pressure, I enjoyed K-Mac's game.
Yeah, lots of love on the internet about it, and he just keeps winning those sort of big contests on the wing, doesn't he? And his marking, his marking, which he worked on over summer, remains. You know, he's not always taking big marks, but he's also not letting the other team take big marks. Like if you watch him overhead. If he's out of position, he at least gets his hand up and changes the flight of the ball. He remains an incredibly important part of the player at the team, even though he's sort of, I'm not sure what he's averaging, but he had 14 touches on the weekend.
You look at his stats profile, and he's quite good at a lot of useful things like goal assists and pressure. He wins big contests. This doesn't win the ball all that much.
It's actually frustrating. Yeah, he's averaging 14 disposal a year this year, and he averaged 14 last year, and averaged 15 in the premiership year. So, it's a clearly established low pattern. But as I've said before, I think the critical contest stat he'd do quite well on. We haven't talked about Shetty yet.
I really enjoyed his game. I did. One of our chat things said about wondering about the Shedder's propensity for the odd turnover, which is definitely.
I actually tweeted it.
Oh, you tweeted it. Yeah. I think it's working really well on the back half, just because he's winning more football, and mostly he makes really good decisions with it. So even if he's a bit over aggressive, sometimes I sort of I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's not working. And it's a good thing to do if you're sub full strength and you need to not necessarily play the dominant strategy all the time, because he breaks the play up. And by the way, it's done wonders for his stats.
He comes up on the list of 10 most improved players in the AFL on AFL ratings.
Oh, no, he doesn't. Oh, yeah, sorry, that's not true. Yeah. You're right, it is. But he was actually doing that before we moved him back. In fact, on the weekend, his game on AFL ratings was probably one of the first times.
It was a bit down.
His AFL rating game was worse than his basic stats number. Which is usually the opposite. And you know, he's averaging 24 touches a year this year, and he's a basically a career 17 disposal a game player. So you can see, you know, that's extra seven touches a game, which is no joke when you're sort of in late career. But yeah, I do wonder whether his best position is forward of the ball, where he's so creative and you know, he gives the most valuable hand pass that breaks up the play, that sets up the goal. And, but that does, you just can't do that all the time without creating a lot of turnovers. And I agree with you, it's working. I just wonder whether you want to play all year like that. When you've got someone like Shortback, who's not quite as creative, but will drive the back line.
Yeah, and you can't drop Stack. Baker's doing a pretty good job in Shedz's role, but you can probably fit him in somewhere else.
Yeah. They're quite different. You can definitely play them together because they're quite different players.
Yep. I think Brandon Ellis remains in sort of one of the last four guys picked, even with a bunch of youngsters in the team. I still really like it when he kicks goals.
Yeah, he's doing what you want your veteran depth to do. So, you know, Dimon talked about that we got rid of a lot of veteran depth at the end of the year, but part of we knew it was because we had some good young players coming through. Well, he didn't know he had Sydney Stack coming through.
probably, I mean, we started to hear about Jack Ross in January.
Yeah, Brando has been the valuable piece that has stuck around, there's no doubt we're better off that he's playing.
He's popular when he kicks a goal. As is Noah Bolter, actually. I really like the way guys got around him.
Yeah. So yeah, it's exciting overall. I think we talked about. I mean, Stack's numbers were great, by the way, as well. I think we should just mention about all the drooling.
I've already got the pitchfork down to AFL House for the Rising Star nomination this week.
Yeah. By the way, I was just, you know, recording on thinking about Dimmer's coaching record is, I was telling someone about this Stack yesterday, who's a Premier League fan. I was saying how Stack stayed in the coach's house for the first 3 months. And it's like, the person couldn't believe it. You know, it's, admittedly, they're a Manchester City fan, and, you know, all Manchester City new signings can afford a palatial mansion, but, the famous ones. It's just, you do reflect, through sometimes Dimmer's tactics worried me a lot before, the current coaching staff arrived. You know, the head coach taking a very marginal young player in and, sort of helping mentoring him along with others in the club, and well, you saw what happened. It's a really good story and reflects well on the club, and let's hope it continues.
Yeah, good times. And yeah, it's a slightly folksy story. Yeah, it's a nice one. And look, it's fantastic what Sydney Stack's done with the opportunity. But yeah, I mean, like, he's overcome some really big challenges to get where he has, and, you know, it'd be naive to think that he won't have some of those challenges again, I think.
Oh, it's going to be tedious in the off-season. The people are going to be posting on the message boards every 3 minutes, what's Sydney Stack doing in Western Australia? You know.
Yeah.
But I'm just loving watching him play.
Yeah. Yeah, good times. On the opposite end of loving watching them play, did you see the Melbourne St Kilda game?
I did a bit. I find it really hard. Both Melbourne are sort of interesting from a car crash perspective, and St Kilda are just dull. And watching their terrible goal kicking, I always think of how you would lose your mind if you're a St Kilda fan. So
I know. It's Richmond without the redeeming quality.
Yeah. So Melbourne, fair to say that the year could have started better.
Yeah, the year could have started better. They're still, like, the bookmakers still rate them, and that's a lot of their underlying stats. They are, Melbourne were really unique as a team last year. Like, the relationship between inside 50s and winning is pretty good. Except for Melbourne, sometimes. Sometimes, like, the Geelong game, they lost by 80 points with quite a lot more inside 50s a few weeks ago. And that's a trend they've had for a couple of years now, where sort of the plan A of them winning all the contested football and banging it long, and sometimes, you know, when the Melbourne forward line's not functioning and they're not getting pressure on, the other team is able to play really effective slingshot football in a way that's not really possible in modern football sometimes. Like, they're not, when they don't have the ball, certainly, they are an extremely good contested football-winning team, and if we had Max Gorn and Clayton Oliver, you know, that would make me extremely happy. But when they don't have the ball, they can be a pretty ponderous team.
Yeah. By the way, just on the, I'm just checking, they're third in the AFL on the inside 50 differential this year.
Mm. Yep. And they've got some decent forwards as well. Tom McDonald's pretty good. Wiedemann's a decent prospect. Christian Petrarca's obviously a huge talent. Yeah, it hasn't been working for them, and I really hope it keeps not working for them. But they are, as when we played them last year, like there were moments when their contested ball winning, you know, along with Gorn and Oliver, got Brayshaw, Viney, Jones, like they bat pretty deep in guys who win their own footy.
Yeah, Petrarca's been knocking up the ball all through the advanced metrics. Don't love his ball use.
Hmm. And
love, yeah, Oliver, loves Oliver, by the way.
Yeah, loves Oliver. By AFL ratings, their top two rated players on Saturday were their two giant ruckmen.
Hmm. Well, Max Gorn's actually rated the third best player in the AFL right now.
Yeah, yeah. And Cruz had 15 disposals and a couple of goals. Right? And they had 40, oh, some incredible number of, yeah, 49 to 16 hit-outs. And it didn't matter. The Saints just ran over the top of them. So I think that's the template for us.
Yeah, and I guess as an overly simplistic hot take, but how Nank goes against Gorn will be absolutely vital. Mm.
Yeah, I think Jake Milksham, who's never rated all that highly, although, you know, Champion Data does, so pay attention to that. I think he's a pretty important player for them. I think if you can, you know, I don't know if absorbs the right word, but, you know, their guns are going to win some football. But if you can stop some of their other damaging players, it'll go a long way.
Yes, control their few players that aren't one paced. Yeah, that's a fair point. So Milksham, who will play on him?
I don't know. So he's sort of mid size, so you can play a few guys, but yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, five day break. I'm sure we'll discover. I'm sure there'll be some exciting late withdrawals. There's a chance of late withdrawals or players.
Yeah, look,
limping.
The word was there are a few sore boys going into the Sydney game. So, yeah, I think both teams. Although, if you're feeling uncharitable, you could suggest that Melbourne perhaps didn't run all that hard on Saturday, so it might be
relieved.
Might be pressure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're under a lot of pressure for a team that, you know, was third in the premiership betting at the start of the year. So
yeah,
I thought I just circled as a big early season game. So
yeah, and you know, well, I agree. And it's enormous for them now. It's a must win, but that doesn't mean they will win. St Kilda was a must win game for them. And you know, I think if looking at the season as a whole thus far for us, we're back to where we were after round one. After round one, we knew that Alex Rance was out, but we suspected we'd still be a pretty good team, as we talked a lot about. Then the next 2 weeks happened and, you know, we started to get nervous that maybe we'll be rubbish. We were never too nervous, but, you know, the fear was there. And now we realize, we are pretty good. And minus Rance, the Death Star's getting pretty close to the fully operational when, Jack comes back this week. So, you know.
Yeah, Cochin back. Next week? It's, and, you know, bunch of new talent. So, look, if we can get through this week, I'm not frightened by the Bulldogs the week after. We'd be.
No, that is self-evident. 12.5-point favourites. Yeah, we get it done. The season opens up and we're well on the way to a top four finish.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
Martin, 3 votes.